So I think it's safe to say Will Smith's had a rough week. Welcome to No Alter Egos, the place for conversations without the mask. We're broadcast every Monday at 2 p.m. on WHPB 98.5 The Wire in Pine Hills, Florida, WUVS 103.7 The Beat in Muskegon, Michigan, and we have a 3 p.m. Tuesday rebroadcast on WVBHLP Power 105.3 in Benton Harbor, Michigan. I'm your host, Joe Kennedy, and welcome back to the show. Another week, another crazy lineup of stories from this past week. Of course, Will Smith's resignation from the Academy, top of the list, but we're going to get to that as one of our main stories. Coach K coached his final game for the Duke Blue Devils this past weekend, falling short to Hubert Davis and the North Carolina Tar Heels in their bid in pursuit of a national championship. And we have so much more to get to, including the crazy story out of Orlando this week about this young woman who's been calling herself Shea Johnson and claiming to be the cousin of young Tyre Sampson. That's the young man whose death went viral, sadly, as he fell out of the free fall ride at Orlando's Icon Park. And someone decided to go ahead and play up to the media that she was a relative of his, having never met or known this man. Just Florida things, I guess. But we have that and so much more coming up this week for you guys. It's been an incredible week, not only for entertainment and sports, but also for science, as we've just witnessed and discovered and seen with the Hubble telescope, the furthest object that we've observed from the Earth, formed around 900 million years after the proposed Big Bang took place, when the universe itself was still just a primordial soup of gases and different forms of matter, all just really beginning to start to form into their clusters, and the infant universe was birthing itself. Well, we just witnessed an object from right around that time period, as some of the earliest stars and galaxies in the universe were forming themselves. So we have a whole lot to get to today. Super excited to bring it to you guys. Before we kick things off, though, want to give a shout out and some love to Born Saint Clothing and Merchandise. The world makes us sinners, but we are born saints. For more information on Born Saint, you can find them on Instagram at brn.saint. Or you can also find them at www.trillkennedy.com/shop. And that's www.trllkennedy.com/shop on your mobile or desktop browser. You can check out some of the new merchandise that they have up for sale from their Spring 22 collection. And yeah, man, let's get into things, though. We have some quick headlines to get into. So without any further ado, let's jump into some of the more interesting stories from this past week. And we're going to start off with just some absolutely crazy news straight out of Florida. Of course, where else? So this young woman, and I don't know how many of you guys have heard about this, but this young woman who's been going by the name Shea Johnson has been going around to the vigils, all the candlelight stuff, every time the news and media show up to Icon Park. And this, of course, is related to the tragic death that took place over at Icon Park back a few weeks ago, when that young 14-year-old kid was not properly secured inside of his harness, ended up being thrown clear of the ride and falling to his death as it slowed down near the bottom of its descent at the free fall ride. Now, in the wake of this young man's tragic death, this young woman has been going around saying that her name is Shea Johnson and that the young man that died is her cousin. And so she's been at the vigils, she's been in front of the cameras with the news saying, you know, I hate that it had to be my cousin that was the one that died, for them to realize how unsafe these rides can be and how the operators aren't paying attention and all this stuff. She's been out there front and center as some kind of ambassador and representative for the family, that she's the one who had to see her family member pass away. Even though he hadn't been let on the other rides, she was there. And she even said, she even went as far as to claim she had to go to the crime scene to clean up blood from where her cousin passed away. Ladies and gentlemen, this young woman does not know the victim's family from Adam. They had to come out with a statement saying that they don't know who this is or why she's been going around doing this. But it turns out she's a local dancer at Flash Dancers in Orlando by the name of Louisiana Browning, 32 years old. And for some godforsaken reason, upon seeing this child's death and the virality of it, because it was captured on video, she decided to put herself front and center, gain all the attention she could off of this young man's death. And one of these crazy things is it speaks to the mentality of the society that we currently occupy and inhabit, right? Because for someone to see a child pass away, die, for them to see it because obviously of the viral nature of that video and how it was shared around the world, and then to hop in and say, I'm gonna use this as an opportunity to gain attention and garner attention for me. that speaks to the crazed, and I talk about this fairly often, how we have a society where antisocial and sociopathic behaviors are not only normalized, but in certain instances glorified. Because all she's doing is capitalizing on a moment, right? The moment's here, and she's just seeking to take advantage of it in a self-promotional way. And so often we sit and we say, well, the ones that seize the moments are the ones that succeed. But at the same time, you have people like this who, when something is clearly, clearly unconscionable and inappropriate, they still decide they're going to hop in and do it. And I'm not going to show her mugshots because right now she's awaiting trial on 8 felony counts for apparently burning the car of an ex-boyfriend's current girlfriend back in December of last year. And from that incident, she's currently awaiting trial on the 8 felonies related to that incident. However, for her to then jump, knowing that she got a case pending, and put herself on national television because this became a national story, as though she is some kind of representative for this young man, this young man whose life was tragically lost for his family. She's putting herself out there as somehow she's the one that has to bear this emotional burden for her cousin. And I'm just, it speaks to the nature of the society that we're continuing to cultivate. And at what point do we say enough is enough? Like, this behavior can't fly, because right now it's not illegal. And I'm not sitting here to call and say that it should be made illegal. What I am sitting here to say is that there is no deterrent that we have in place. Like, so she lost her job at Flash Dancers. There's going to be another club that takes her in and allows her to continue dancing. Like, it doesn't matter that she lost the one job because the strip club doesn't want to be associated with the kind of negative energy that she's been cultivating by going around lying about her relation to this young man. But I think about the fact that as a person, as a human being, and maybe it's just her broken mind, but she would see someone's death and think, oh, my time to shine. Come on. We always try and strive to make the world a better place. But I've realized that one of the main reasons why that's an extremely difficult thing to do, aside from the fact that there are people who genuinely and generally don't care about others who run the world, is that there are people who genuinely and generally don't care about others who also just live among us. They're not running society and at the top of society. They're just sociopaths that we encounter every day, whether at the grocery store, walking on the street, or at the gym or something. You're running into people every single day that do not care about human beings. Forget about you. Of course, if you're a perfect stranger, it's hard to say that, oh, I care about what happens to this perfect stranger. You can have an abiding love for humanity, whatever you want to call it. But at the end of the day, you're going to feel a stronger sense of empathy towards the people that you know. But to think about the fact that there are people who are relatively incapable of just looking at other human beings, whether it's their relatives or friends, whatever the case may be, but no human being is someone that they're capable of empathizing with. Everything revolves around them, their needs and desires and place in the world as they perceive it in this game of life. Because to sociopaths and psychopaths, and I'm not going to say this is across the board, but to a lot of them, life is like a game, especially to sociopaths. People are just pawns to be used a lot of times because their behaviors, they don't care about the consequences to others. They're thinking about what matters most to them. And I think about the fact that, once again, as I said, in spite of all this going on, you would think that his family suffering enough, having lost this young man, not only so tragically young, but in such a tragically preventable manner. And then to top it all off, the fact that he was such an above average size human being for his age group. What 14-year-old do you know to 6'5", 340? That young man was going to the league. He had NFL dreams. And that's not what should make him matter more or less per se. But it's just to say that this is a whole human life and story that was taken, especially from the people that he loved. And humanity shared collectively in it because we all witnessed it. But to think that even in the midst of all this, there was still someone who had no kind of social breaks, no kind of chill, and said, you know what? Yeah, this is my time to go out there and to lie about being related to him. You know, it is what it is, man. It just speaks volumes about where we are right now. And personally, I'm telling you, man, nah, no way. It's too much hurt already going on. And maybe it's hard for her to feel shame. But Luashina, like, eventually you're going to cost yourself, like, a lot of your future. The internet's forever. People are going to remember that you were the one that went around parading as this dead kid's relative for attention for yourself. These things follow you around longer than you think. At any rate, we're going to keep things pushing though. More quick takes coming up right now. So as of this past weekend, astronomers that were using the Hubble Space Telescope announced that they had discovered a star, at least what they believe to be a star. They're going to have to do some further observations with the James Webb Telescope to really zoom in and hone in on it and confirm that this star is a star, because it could be a binary star system. It could be something else entirely. But what they're speculating right now is that this object that they have seen is a star from one of the earliest formed sections of our entire universe. It came into being around 900 million years or so after the Big Bang, which is once again still just a theory, but it's the cleanest explanation that we have right now. Of course, if you're religious, then you're going to say the creation story. But in terms of scientifically speaking, let's just say for argument's sake right now, the foundational event of our universe takes place. And so in the first billion years or so, it's a thick, soupy, black mass. There wasn't too many lights that were forming. There wasn't too much light in our earliest universe because at the time of the Big Bang, and it's funny how this all worked out, but there were specific amounts of matter and antimatter present. And matter and antimatter, when they come into contact with each other, they release a ton of energy in essentially a nuclear explosion almost, if you will. And so at the very beginning, the foundations of our universe, there's this large clash between matter and antimatter. What will win? What will our universe be made entirely out of? And it turns out that there was just enough matter in terms of a surplus of matter to antimatter such that all the matter that now currently exists inside of our known universe ended up being left over after these chaotic and violent initial moments of our universe. And so for that first billion years, all you had were the earliest elements and molecules that were coming together in this thick gaseous soup as matter started to come together and clump into clusters that we could then say began to form the earliest interstellar objects in space, these bodies. And so as all this was coming together, our universe was still a very dim, a very dark and lonely place. And so within this early primordial soup, this first billion years of existence, you have the earliest galaxies and star systems and all that start to form. And so they believe that they have discovered a star from one of these earliest sets of galaxies that began to form in the infancy of our universe. They've named it Arendelle. And as I said, it's right now believed to be a star. They have to do some confirmationary studies using things like the James Webb Telescope to ensure that it is in fact a star and not some other maybe unknown type of celestial body. And I just want to provide some quick insight on how we even discovered this thing in the first place. Anytime scientists are looking out into space, especially into the furthest reaches of space, you don't always have as much light information as you'd like to have. But with the advent of the Hubble and now the James Webb, we're able to study even faint light from some of the furthest reaches of the existing universe. And so there is a supercluster, if you will, called WHL-0137-08. And this supercluster, there are so many galaxies and structures within our universe that the force of gravity there is exceedingly powerful. So powerful, in fact, that it warps the light of the objects that are around it, thus making it actually a little bit clearer to see into the background. It's a phenomenon called gravitational lensing. And so that's what a lot of these telescopes will use to observe it. And it was in the middle of observing the gravitational lensing effect on this WHL-0137-08 supercluster in one of the earliest known regions of our universe that we were able to see this thin arc. It's an arc of celestial bodies that we can determine to be actually old galaxies or stars or planets. And inside of that was this really bright object that we now call Arendelle, which is believed to be a star, but once again, will have to be confirmed. And as I said, I'm just really excited that we're continuing to break ground on the horizons of our knowledge about our physical reality. It's always great when we're able to do that. We're going to keep things moving, though, to our next topic. So stick with us. We have more coming up right now. So our next quick take doesn't really bring me any joy to bring you guys. It doesn't spark my curiosity. It's actually, it's one of those things that says American is pie now. Now, according to gunviolence.org, there have been 120 reported and confirmed mass shootings in 2022 alone. We are at the very beginning of April. That means for the last 3 months, there have been 40 mass shootings a month. Now, to clarify what a mass shooting is, because a lot of times we tend to get those things confused, and because we only really see the ones, especially in the national news, where there is a high number of victims, more than five or so. But a mass shooting is defined as a shooting incident where there are at least four people injured in an act of gun violence within the same location. At least four people injured. And of course, that four people injured standard also means people killed. So essentially the number of casualties. So whether it's killed or injured, as long as it tallies up to four, that is a mass shooting. That's considered a mass shooting. Now, if you heard the term four and just four injured and thought, oh, that's not so bad, that is a part of the desensitization that's taken place within our country as we see more and more of these. And as we get used to hearing about these exorbitant figures in numbers from these shooting incidents. But the truth of the matter is, if you're anywhere where there are four people who end up getting shot, you've just been through one of the worst experiences of your life from a trauma standpoint. So for this year alone, and it's not to say that there aren't any more out there, but for the ones that have been reported and confirmed, there have been 120 mass shootings here in the US alone. We lead the world every single year in mass shootings. It's a problem that's almost exclusively and uniquely American. We're a country where there are more guns than people. We are the leading arms dealer in the world, and we usually sell arms to both sides of conflicts around the world. That having been said, we had another mass shooting this past weekend in Sacramento, California. It was about 2 a.m. There were either one, or, and there are some reports that there were multiple shooters that covered a two-block radius in downtown city center. This is the downtown heart of the capital of California, Sacramento. They went about on this shooting rampage, and as I said, there are reports that there may have been more than one shooter. As of the recording of this podcast, they still have not apprehended a suspect. And that's even crazier to think that mass shooters are getting so much more effective. Like, I would dare to say that right now, the mass shooter phenomenon, at least for our generation, is akin to the serial killer phenomenon back in the 70s and the 80s, where these guys were really just making themselves known to the American consciousness. Like, we're here, we're in society, and there's nothing you can do to stop us. And it's the same thing we're going through now with these mass shooters, where they're here, we have these shooting rampages that'll take place, and you thank your lucky stars every single day you're not involved in one, because at some point around the country, at least once a day, statistically, more than once a day, but at least one time a day, statistically speaking, there is a mass shooting incident. And so this latest incident in Sacramento saw, in the initial reports, six killed, at least 10 injured. Of course, that may change in the coming days as there are those who may succumb to their injuries, or hopefully all of them recover from their injuries, but the shooter and or shooters are still at large. And I think about the fact that every time this happens, there are no politicians that even want to talk about it anymore. No one wants to say, let's have some good old-fashioned common sense gun regulation. It's the same reason why not everyone has a license to drive a car. We might think driving is a right, but driving is a right that you earn after you have completed. It's actually a privilege that we think of as a right, but you've earned it after you've completed your driving test and shown that you can go out on the road and be a safe motorist. And so for these large vehicles that, even though they have an alternative purpose where they're supposed to take us from point A to point B, and to be perfectly honest with you, I love cars, but cars are one of the leading causes of death in our country. And so what do? We regulate them to a degree. Now, mind you, all of this is coming on the heels of that shooting rampage in San Francisco from about a month ago, where that violently abusive father who had been stalking and harassing his ex and their kids for quite some time finally snapped, went to the church where the kids were, and killed his kids, as well as a fourth person in the church, before finally turning the gun on himself. And so this grim milestone now of 120 mass shootings here in the US in 2022 alone, we haven't heard about a lot of these because, once again, obviously, it's four killed or injured or a combination of the two. And so if there aren't the high death numbers, CNN's not really going to care about it. But of course, 16 people hit, six of them killed, 10 of them injured, is something, unfortunately, that old adage in the news industry, if it bleeds, it leads, it still rings true. And we're at this point now where, what can we do? What can we really do seriously? Like, there are all these things that really are common sense notions where we say, okay, if everyone is going to have access to a gun, then let's make it so that people have to at least be responsible enough to get things registered and to have even maybe yearly or bi-yearly proficiency classes, just little things that we can do to ensure that people that own guns in our country at least have some kind of way to make sure that they are keeping up on safety standards and practices, and that we know who they are and where they are. And you say, well, why do we need to know that? Because right now we have a bunch of guns around the country, and the result of not having any of this in place is that every single day in our country, a bunch of people around our nation, a group of them, get surprised because someone shows up with a gun and begins shooting people. That's just how it goes. And unfortunately, until we can get to a place where common sense legislative measures, like making sure that people who own guns have them registered, that they have them safely secured and stored on their properties, that whenever they're going out into public with them, they have to have them safely secured, holstered, whatever the case may be. We have all these things where we could say, here are some common sense gun safety laws and measures that we can put in place to ensure that not only do guns not fall into the wrong hands, but that even when they're in the right hands. There's a story that just broke this past week about the fact that two kids lost their lives because one kid was playing with a gun and accidentally went off and killed her sister. And so as she was turning to inspect it, it must have gone off and shot her in the head. And so two children lost their lives because of improperly stored and secured guns. And we can put that onus on the owners all we want to, but how do we change social behaviors through laws and legislation? That's what we've agreed to in our society. It's one of the tenets that we've agreed to. And if we're going to say that we're going to have this large military industrial complex and we're going to have all these guns that flood our streets, then the very least that we can do is make it so that we all don't have to live in constant fear that we may end up being in the wrong place at the wrong time during one of the more unfortunate pastimes of our country, which is a mass shooting event. At any rate, let's get into our last quick story of the day, and that is on the fulfillment of the Human Genome Project. So the Human Genome Project was started back in 1985, and the stated aims and goals of it were to map out the entirety of the human genome. Now back then, computer technology was still evolving. We had hard drives and computing systems that went from being the size of entire rooms and sometimes buildings to now the personal computing revolution. And so with this revolution in computer technology, memory, and storage, we were able to take on and pursue brand new horizons in science. One of those horizons that we ended up deciding to pursue was finding out a complete map of what makes us, us. And so as the Human Genome Project kicked off, they said that we want to make sure that we can find out what it is exactly that goes on inside of us on a cellular level within our DNA. And they came very close to achieving that goal. They had mapped out around 92% of the human genome by the turn of the century and the start of the new millennium. And it was marked as this huge milestone in science where it's like, we finally understand a large majority of what makes us us. But it turns out that that was only the first leg of the journey. And it would take another 2 decades, 20 years to get to the point where we have now fully mapped out the entire human genome. And that was announced this past weekend as well, that scientists have finally completed the human genome, all 100% of it. And it's huge news because although we don't know how to understand and interpret all this new information that we have taken in about our genetic structure in the human genome, as we go through the years and as we parse through and dissect this data, we are going to gain so much new and clearer insight into not only what it is that makes us tick, but into what causes things like cancer and disease inside of humanity. And so I'm really, really super excited to be able to even bring this to you guys, that we've broached this new horizon now in science where, yes, we had a large copy and chunk of the human genome, but we've now finally sequenced all of it. And this means that people are going to be able to know and understand at a deeper level why certain hereditary diseases happen, why there are certain gene expressions that take place at earlier or later stages in life. And it simply was because we didn't have the technology to really get that last 8%. We had to grow and evolve scientifically in our knowledge base and in our technological base as a species to even get to this point. But over the past 20 years, that technology has finally come on the scene now, to where we have been able to finally and fully map out our genetic sequence. And we're going to be able to use this information, as I said, not only to study diseases and their effects on the human population, but we're also going to be able to compare it to our closest relatives, if you will, in the great apes of this world and see, okay, where exactly do all these genes that we really share so much of, where is it that there is the bridge or the breaking point where human beings genetically really become distinctly human and separate from all of the great apes, where we become our own thing inside of this world. And so, yeah, man, they just announced it. I'm really happy and excited to be able to even bring this to you guys, because I'm a huge science nerd. In addition to being a bookworm, I love what science is doing for our species and is capable of doing for our species moving forward into the future. And so anytime you have something like this, where we gain a larger and deeper fundamental understanding of what makes us up at our core, man, that just gets me. I don't even know how to describe the feeling. It's indescribable. At the same time, because we are still catching up in technology to where we need to be to really fully analyze it, this marks now just another chapter or step in the journey. Because with this influx of information about the human genome, we're going to have to be able to study, analyze, and interpret it in the proper ways to really garner and glean from it the not only results, but the answers that we're looking for to the stories of the origin of us, if you will. So yeah, man, just wanted to bring you guys this, but we're going to get into our main stories of the day coming up next here on No Alter Egos. So let's get into our first main story of the day. And that story has to do with the brand new labor union, the very first of its kind that has been formed underneath the corporate umbrella and on behalf of the workers employed to Amazon, owned, of course, by one of the richest men in the world, Jeff Bezos. So what is this all about? Well, back in the 90s, this guy, Jeff Bezos, was working in technology, and he had an idea. How could he sell books directly to people using the newfound technology of the internet to reach a much broader and wider audience of people? So what does he do? He forms this company that we now know as Amazon, or Amazon.com. It starts out in his garage. There is a just over a $250,000 loan that his parents helped him out with when the company started to flounder. But it essentially becomes this domain, Amazon.com, where it's an online digital bookstore. He's selling books to people over the internet. Now, back then, maybe he had the vision for what Amazon has become now. But back then, I don't know that there were many people that envisioned that Amazon would become one of the biggest corporations in the history of the world. But Jeff Bezos probably did. And in the founding of this company, he evolved certain strategies that would allow him to maximize productivity and profits. And as Amazon has evolved as a company over the years and grown into this behemoth where we have the Amazon ecosystem now, because really, that's what it's been building towards this entire time, where you have as a customer someone who is using Amazon for a bunch of different products and services. So of course you have Amazon Video or Amazon Prime Video. You have Amazon Music, Amazon Prime Music. You have Amazon Prime generally, where you have free 1 and 2 day shipping. You have all these tiers built into it, not to mention Amazon.com, one of the, if not the world's largest online marketplace. Of course you have the Alibabas of the world. You have Walmart, who has been in competition, well, not really competition so much with Amazon these past few years, but you have this giant conglomerate of a company where you have these independent shipping drivers that go out and make sure that the big thing that Amazon is known for is that you can find most everything from A to Z, and it's going to be delivered to your house on time or in a timely window. And so for this giant and fantastical vision of what this company, this large corporate conglomerate, Amazon, could be, there's always, 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 always something behind it that's making a company of this size able to run so efficiently. So we hear trickles of news stories about how sometimes, because drivers have to meet quotas and they have to meet certain delivery, not only quotas, but they have to meet it within a certain time frame, drivers are encouraged to pee in bottles and certain things like that to make sure that they're not missing out on delivering things on time. You hear stories about workhouse and warehouse conditions where sometimes there's been instances where workers have died inside of the warehouse and people have been told to just keep on moving and acting, get it out of the way, have the coroner, the ambulance, whatever, come pick it up and get back to work because there are people that need their packages. And I will first and wholeheartedly admit that I have used Amazon and still do use Amazon to get things delivered. And so it makes me partially reticent to talk about this because you don't want to come off as a hypocrite, because I use the service even knowing what I know about what goes on behind the scenes. And at the same time, it's like, well, I can get everything I need. The camera that I use to film this podcast, the microphone that I'm using to record it on, the lights that help to make the show even possible now for the YouTube element. And even before that, the interface that I'm using to record the audio, all of these things I purchased on Amazon.com. There is no getting over the fact that Amazon is a powerful entity in today's world. And one of the reasons why they have been able to do things like not pay corporate taxes for several years back in the decade of the 2010s is because not only of the corporate laws that lobbyists that operate on Amazon and the retail industry's behalf have gotten passed in Congress, but also because workers at Amazon have been working under what we would consider not maybe deplorable conditions, but certainly militant conditions. They've been working a bit under the gun, if you will, even if there's this friendly thing put out there about how Amazon treats its workers, you know, with dignity and respect. The truth is, we've heard too many horror stories right now to continue to believe corporate propaganda. And so for me, I have been at a moral crossroads with my Amazon purchases for quite some time. But guess what? I still make the purchases because no one's perfect, man. But why do I say all that? I say all that to say that the start of the pandemic really, really changed things. As the world came to a halt, many people realized that the mobile revolution was taking place, because the only thing that gave people a sense of normalcy was the fact that your Amazon orders could still be delivered on time. Even if you couldn't leave the house, if your city was on a lockdown, whatever the case may be, Amazon was still operating. Their warehouses were still running and going. Their employees were still expected to show up even in the midst of a pandemic. Why? Because they made promises to customers to deliver their goods, and they needed to follow through on those promises. Enter Chris Smalls. Chris Smalls is an Amazon warehouse worker that begins to realize this is a bit of a grift. Like, why are we being treated like this? And so he begins to ask questions and inquire about forming a union, which is not only 100% legal, but it's actually 100% illegal for union busting to take place. Although corporations like Amazon have for years found creative measures to get around and to circumvent the letter and spirit of the laws that are meant to protect workers and their rights in the workplace. And so for years, Amazon, while they have not directly union busted, has participated and has gone to great lengths to stop the formation of a union among the ranks of especially their warehouse workers. And so Chris Smalls, as he began to discuss and talk about the potential for unionizing and go to his fellow coworkers and say, hey guys, like, we're kind of getting shafted here. We're kind of getting the poor end of the stick. And as he began to work and try and get that done, lo and behold, he gets fired. One of his former managers even saying he's not that smart or articulate. And so Chris Smalls, in the midst of this pandemic, loses his job because he's trying to find a way to make life better for himself and the people that he works with. Enter Chris Smalls and his organizational and strategic mind to the chat. Chris Smalls then goes about doggedly pursuing the creation of a labor union for Amazon warehouse workers. And for the past year and a half, almost 2 years, he has fought to really make sure that workers, especially in those warehouses, which I reported on this in the podcast last year, those tornadoes that tore through the middle states, Tennessee, Kentucky, there was the casualties that took place were inside of the Amazon warehouse, where those workers were told that they could not leave, even though there was a tornado bearing down on them. And six workers at least, and I have to go back and make sure that's a correct figure, but at least six workers died in that warehouse as a result of those tornadoes and them not being able to leave. And here we are, after Chris Smalls loses his job, after those warehouse workers unfortunately lose their lives, the Amazon labor union is finally a thing. And in a historic vote, out of 4,785 ballots cast at the warehouse in Staten Island, New York, 2,654 of them voted to unionize, making them the first Amazon labor union in the country and marking the first labor union in the history of Amazon, the company, one of the largest behemoths on planet Earth today. And this was no small feat. After being fired, Chris Smalls would have to go, and he'd started on GoFundMe when he first formed the Amazon Labor Union. He had to go to GoFundMe to raise money to even get things off the ground. They had to bus people out to barbecues. I think he said they had 20 or so barbecues that they had to try and encourage people. And even then, there was anti-union pamphlets and notices put up in places like the bathrooms, inside of the warehouses. Like, you got to understand the subtle psychological warfare that was being waged. And still through it all, after all this time, the Amazon Labor Union is a thing. And Chris Smalls is its first president. And so who knows where this goes from here? What I will say is that I stand in solidarity with the warehouse workers of Amazon. You guys are heroes. You kept a semblance of normal life in America during the pandemic. And before the pandemic, you guys were doing an incredible job. And even now, as we are entering not the waning stages of the pandemic, but as we return to a sense of normalcy, the Amazon warehouse workers have been the lifeblood of this company and really have been the lifeblood of a sense of normalcy for tens of millions of people around the world every single day and week. And so thank you to the Amazon warehouse workers first and foremost, but congratulations to the Staten Island warehouse workers on forming your union. I hope this is the first of many to come, because truth be told, Jeff Bezos has made a ton of money from this corporation, and it's about time the warehouse workers especially were able to gain themselves some of the benefits, to reap some of the benefits of all the hard work that they do to make sure that our lives are a little bit more convenient. We're going to keep things moving, though, to our final major story of the day. So stick around. We have more coming up right now on No Alter Egos. All right, so let's get into this whole Will Smith, Chris Rock situation. And I'm jumping into this, and I want to talk about this as our second main story or second lead story for this episode, because I realized something in this. Now, we can change in the aftermath and fallout, and that's why I kind of just gave a recap of what happened last week, but I said I wanted to wait until I saw how everything played out before I really came and said my piece on it. And I realized that I really didn't have much to say on the incident. This section is going to be a think piece on think pieces, because in the wake of that slap, the slap heard and seen around the world, if you will, so many think pieces came out. Everyone had an opinion on it. And the opinion split people really into two camps. Those who felt Will was justified for one reason or another, and those who clutched their pearls and thought, under no circumstances is that allowable should it ever happen. But the goofiest opinions of all came from everyone in what they call, what, liberal Hollywood, if you will. I don't know, if I had rolled my eyes any harder right now, you'd be looking at the whites of my eyes. They'd be in the back of my head. Because what I eventually got sick and tired of was hearing from every non-black person in Hollywood how traumatized they were, as though Will has slapped them physically on stage, how sick to their stomach they felt, and how they were still triggered and shaken. And oh my, like, when I say those were the most trash takes offered on this whole incident, and I had to swim, and we've all had to swim for the past week and change in a sea of this nonsense from these people about how these two black men who got into whatever you want to call it, an altercation, a misunderstanding. It wasn't really an altercation, because Will just walked on stage and smacked the crap out of him. I wanted to say something else once again, FCC. You know, I know we have the YouTube companion, but YouTube, I'm sorry. Sometimes you're going to hear things that are said simply because you can't say them on radio, unless it's SiriusXM in certain cases. I digress. Anyways, what was this incident that at first, as I admitted last week, I thought was staged, and that after seeing the continuation, I realized it wasn't staged? What could have been an ugly moment that at the end of the day is still like, it wouldn't have happened if Chris hadn't said something. And Will also, bruh, you didn't have to go slap him on the night where you won your first Oscar for Best Actor. You kind of ruined both of your nights in that way. But no, instead we had to hear how everyone else was affected by this incident that took place between these three people, because really it was an incident between Chris, Will, and Jada. Obviously caught and played out for the world to see. And shout out to Will Packer and the team that produced the Oscars, not for how they've handled it in the aftermath, because the whole he said, she said, the lies about how Will was asked but refused to leave the Oscars and the conflicting reports, I don't care for any of that. What I do care about is that it still didn't end up destroying the show. In fact, it made it one of the most memorable Oscars ever. And now Will Packer is someone who I have a ton of genuine love and respect for what he does in the creative community, especially what he does for Black creatives and giving them opportunities to tell their stories and be heard. But this Oscars was his first time producing and, of course, is now going to be one of the most infamous Oscars ever. But I say embrace it. And I'm offering this think piece on think pieces because I'm sick of it. If your opinion is not backed up by solid, logical, factual information, sometimes it's hard to do that because it is strictly an opinion. But there are a lot of people who offer their opinions, and in seeking to be more righteous than the next, they say the most asinine things. I don't want to hear from another person who is not a Black person in Hollywood. I want to hear one more sentence about how you felt as though you were slapped, about how it was disgraceful. Because at the end of the day, here's one of those things that never gets acknowledged. Black people are not allowed to exist as individuals in American society. So what was an incident between two Black men, obviously because one of them made a joke about the wife of the other, probably unbeknownst to the jokester that the wife of the man that he was making fun of was suffering from a medical condition, a serious one that causes her to lose her hair, and then the husband, upon seeing his wife's frustrated reaction to the joke, walked up on stage and, in truth, did assault the comedian or the jokester. But at the same time, it's not as though he just did it for no reason. You got to understand, there's a confluence of circumstances behind what took place at the Oscars. It wasn't the first time Chris had made a joke. And I'm not sitting here to justify what Will did either. What I am here to say is that Black people aren't allowed to exist inside of their own individual identities. Everything we do, especially publicly, relates back to the Black monolith in society, because the dark and ugly truth is that society, no matter how progressive they want to claim to be, no matter how progressive people claim to be, they still see Black people as just one Black person. There is a Black mass. It's the mass of Blackness in America. And so Black people can't exist as themselves. Black people can't exist as just themselves. Everything that we do is inside this vacuum of the monolith. And so when Will and Chris Rock have this altercation on stage, it's not two men having an altercation. It's all Black men everywhere. And so I see everyone jumping out the woodworks, not only from the garbage takes from non-Black Hollywood, and I'm using that euphemism because you know what? Y'all not going to get me caught up today. But not only all these stupid think pieces that we're seeing from people who really shouldn't be proffering their opinion, at least that strongly, on the issue itself, but reminding us once more that as Black people, we live inside of a monolithic, like, that's our place in society, not only on the lowest rungs of society, but anything one Black person does is a reflection on all Black people. So when Will Smith walks on stage and slaps Chris Rock for disrespecting his life, that's not Will Smith slapping Chris Rock. It's two Black men engaged in the violence that they're so known for throughout society. And I'm sick of it. I'm sick of the bogus think pieces showing white trauma and how the slap between these two Black men actually hurt white people, maybe somehow even worse, especially the ones that were in attendance for the Oscars. I'm sick and tired about hearing, especially from other Black people, about how this is why white people don't respect us. Like, respectability politics has gotten us nowhere. We can be honest about that historically. And now we have the fallout and aftermath of the situation where Will Smith, having come off what was supposed to be a high moment and through his own fault, to be clear, brought it to one of the low points of his career, has now resigned his place inside of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts. So what does that mean? I don't know. I don't think he has to give back any Oscars, but I don't know that he's going to be eligible for the Oscars for quite some time unless he's reinstated after a period of time or whatever the case may be. His movie career is also now on hold. Several projects with Netflix are now being put on pause, on ice, as it were, while the fallout still continues. And in the wake of all this, all that anyone's had to offer is one trash take after another. So I'm going to be here to just put an end to it. Chris Rock said a joke in bad taste about Jada Pinkett Smith. He maybe was not aware of her alopecia. The joke was still distasteful. Will Smith, who initially chuckled at the joke, saw his wife's reaction and said, you know what? Nah, you're not going to embarrass my woman publicly. And what did he do? He walked up and smacked him. Open palm, real quick as lightning, turned around, fixed his jacket, and walked off the stage. That's what happened, period. In the wake of it, everyone that's been making it about how the slap hurt them, everyone that's been using it to justify why black people are treated on the lower rungs of society, everyone that's offered a think piece devoid of thought, please, from now until the end of time, shut up. No one wants to hear it. No one wants to hear your bad take on it, because the reality is this. There was an incident between several adults that just so happened to be caught on camera for a global audience. And of course, these are two box office stars. Will a little more so than Chris, but Chris Rock is a titan in his own right, especially in the world of comedy. At the end of the day, what Will Smith did to Chris Rock was a reflection of Will's own poor judgment in that moment in time. Poor judgment sparked, of course, by seeing the person that he probably loves the most in this world outside of his kids being hurt by the words of this comedian said for all the world to see, and not the first time doing so. Once again, not justified in his actions, but it's not as though he did something, he slapped him for no reason, right? Moving forward, can we stop being our own worst enemies at the table? Can we stop saying every time something like this happens, how it's a reflection on all black people? We know that. We all know. We know what the game is. We have to live life. Every day in America, we live this life in this country. We sit here and we know what it is. We don't have to pretend or beat around the bush or act like it's any different. But what I'm not going to do anymore is strip myself of individuality, and I hope and encourage you to do the same. So let's put an end to the think pieces and the nonsense. Let's understand that something terrible happened between two adults, two adult black men who are allowed to be human in that moment. And there will be a time when they get together and reconcile, or maybe they won't. What I do know is that what happened between them does not reflect on me, except in the eyes of people for whom it will. And I know that there's still a reality that I have to live and deal with, but what I won't do is consign myself to that reality. What I won't do is participate in perpetuating that reality. Black people are human beings, fully actualized and realized, and we all have differing train of thoughts. That's why Candace Owens can choose to sell people out every single day. That's why she can choose to do things to the detriment of her community, which, while I may despise some of the points that she takes, I celebrate her ability to speak and think freely for herself, although I do find her thinking and speech patterns destructive to her own community. I still celebrate the fact that she is her own person and not a reflection, thankfully, of all black people. And we have to stop begging for respect in a society that was not really aimed to provide it to us. You got to understand, black people were brought into this country as slaves. They were always meant to be chattel, property. They were thought of like dogs, just with a little more intelligence that you had to take care of. And this country fought a whole civil war over whether or not we should be free, much less considered human inside of this society. Let's step away from it all and understand this. The hot takes and the whole victim complex and mentality that's been put out by some of white Hollywood, whatever. We all know, okay, ignore that. Especially some of them who got dragged in the aftermath of offering their opinions. Well, what I will say is this. No matter what side of the fence you fall on, I think we can all agree that it's high time black people got the bare decency and respect to just be humans. And to not have the actions of black people on spotlights and stages mean that the rest of our lives have to be hell, that we have to answer for them. I don't know Will Smith or Chris Rock. I can't tell you why it went down the way it did. I can only tell you that it did. And so, on behalf of young black people everywhere, we're sick and tired of it, and we want the freedom to just be ourselves without having our actions reflect on everyone and without having anyone else's actions reflect on us. Coming up next, what I'm reading, followed by our Tech Talk Minute, and the final thought for the day. This is No Alter Egos. This week on What I'm Reading, I'm going to be wrapping up the three-part series on American Demagogue that we started a couple weeks back. As I said, it's the book on the history of demagoguery in our country. It starts off with an excerpt about former President Trump and how we thought this was a relatively new phenomenon, that this guy would be able to come in and galvanize such an overwhelming mass of people in our country. But the truth is, and as this book explained, America has foundational roots of demagoguery going all the way back to the Puritans who first came over here, and with a variety of characters ranging from George Whitefield or Whitefield to Gilbert Tennant to Jonathan Edwards and Jonathan Mayhew, there were this steady cast of characters of guys who, using the word of God, were able to galvanize tons of people in this country. And this is back in the 18th century, where we really saw this revival take place. Because we have to understand, and this is one of those things that I spoke about it last week, but I came to a greater understanding as I wrapped the book up, was that the Puritans were technically considered religious extremists. So extreme, in fact, that during the days of Oliver Cromwell, they actually revolted against the British crown, killed the king in England, and took over England or Britain for the next 10 years until they were removed by a popular revolt and forced to essentially flee to the New World. Hence, the Puritan foundational aspects of our country. Our country was technically founded by religious extremists, but shh, they don't want us to realize all that. At any rate, after having a look at the puritanical origins and foundations, you begin to realize that that led directly to the spirit of rebellion and revolution inside of the earliest days of the colonies as they led up to the Revolutionary War. Because as these new preachers, these new light preachers, as they were called, came in and started sparking up revivals, as they started encouraging better treatment of slaves, they led both directly and indirectly to the Revolutionary War. And even the abolitionists, the Quakers and whatnot, who weren't the only religious group interested in abolition, but were one of the leading abolitionist groups early on in this country, you begin to see that it's these people that were able to go around to these church houses and meeting houses throughout the colonies that helped to spark the revolutionary mindset in our country, eventually leading to the Revolutionary War, and further on down the road, even the Civil War, as Black people were able to finally gain their freedom. But it's an incredible read. If you do have Audible, I would highly recommend you get it. Otherwise, it can also be found on Amazon.com, and I'll put a link to that down in the description below. But yeah, man, American Demagogue, incredible, incredible book. And also, don't forget, if you are watching this on YouTube, to please like and subscribe. If you're listening to the live broadcast, thank you for being here. And also, check out the YouTube rebroadcast. There may be something that you've missed, or you can also just see the things that you can't see when you're listening over radio. Either way, we're going to be here back again. Just wanted to share a little bit more about what I've been reading. Going to be starting a new book called Republican Gemara this week, and I'm excited to talk with you guys next week as I delve more into it about what exactly it contains and all that it entails. We have our Tech Talk Minute coming up, followed by our final thought. Stick around here on No Alter Egos. So for our Tech Talk Minute, I want to ask you guys, how many of you have seen the show Black Mirror on Netflix? If you have, then you'll know that there's this episode that they have where these robotic dogs essentially are operating as police in the future, hunting down and even capable of killing people, and they do so, essentially purging the landscape of those who are deemed unworthy of life. And so in seeing this show, I was like, yo, is this even possible? Lo and behold, Boston Dynamics, a robot company based in Boston, Massachusetts, decided they wanted to create the thing. And they had been working on a prototype of the thing for quite some time. Now, we've seen different tests over the years that have come up, but I want to acknowledge that their robotic dog prototype is actually going to be patrolling in real life over in the ruins of Pompeii over in Italy. Of course, we know that Pompeii was destroyed back in about 79 AD when that volcano erupted Mount Vesuvius and essentially destroyed the city, killing almost the entirety of the population in a wave of volcanic ash, fire, and smoke. However, the ruins of that city that have been left behind have been deemed to be a UNESCO World Heritage Site. And so Boston Dynamics landed the contract to have their robot dogs patrol Pompeii in an effort to keep away unwanted visitors so that the artifacts, which are priceless from an archaeological standpoint, can be maintained in a safe and healthy environment. But it's a bit of life imitating art, where those dogs that we saw in Black Mirror, although these ones aren't quite as weaponized clearly as the dogs from Black Mirror, but they are going to be patrolling the ruins of Pompeii to ensure that unwanted visitors and those who look to otherwise disturb the archaeologically precious site won't be able to do so, at least without facing some form of consequence, and of course without being caught by one of these robot dogs that are now going to be monitoring the area. That's it for our Tech Talk Minute. We're going to move on to our final thought as we get ready to wrap up this week's show. This week's final thought is going to be relatively plain and simple. It's to remember that this guy right here, the guy inside your head, your noggin, your brain, is one of the most powerful friends and allies you can ever have in this life. It can also be one of the worst enemies that you make along this journey of life. And it all depends on how much control you cede to autopilot and how much control you decide to wield yourself. And so my final thought for this week that I hope encourages you as you go throughout the rest of your week is this. Take time every single day to make yourself mindful of the fact that you're alive, you're present in that moment, and you alone are in control of your thoughts and your actions. So many things can be avoided with just a moment of thought. And so often, we get caught up in just living on autopilot that we make ourselves susceptible to the ups and downs of just living life. But the second we become determined to be aware of and in control of our mind and what we think, see, and perceive on a daily basis is the second that we take back control of our lives and put ourselves on a path to a much better destiny. So this week, as you go through the week, be more mindful. Understand and remember that your brain is extraordinarily powerful, no matter the use that you put it to. If you put it to bad use, it'll become powerfully bad. On the contrary, and on the other hand, if you take the time to put it to good use, your brain can be the best friend that you ever had and cause and allow you to be able to think and act your way into the life that you know you're capable of and that you've always dreamed of. So as you go through this week, take a few minutes every day and become more mindful. As you find your mind wandering throughout the week, take a step back. Take back the reins of control. Don't surrender so much of your power and control to the autopilot functions, because often you'll just get caught up working in the same habits that you're used to. Active change takes place when we decide to become active in the control of our mind and how we use it on a day-to-day, hour-to-hour, and minute-to-minute basis. Go throughout this week. Remember, you're the one that's in control of this thing. That thing up in your head, you're in control of it. Take care of yourselves, and as always, God bless.
Looking in the mirror, I know I'm imperfect. Just like everybody else I know. Most times I wish the world looked beneath the surface. But I guess that's how life goes. Had to learn to love myself this time around. Pop a bottle in and take a sip just because. Book a flight and then take a trip just because. Love myself just because.